Good morning. We're going to call this meeting of the Ag Policy Committee to order. And thank you all for attending today. I'm sure some of you came from a fairly long distance away. We have a fairly long list of testifiers and want to thank you for coming down to the Capitol this morning. And because we want to make sure that you all get a chance to have your testimony heard, we're going to start with the testimony from the audience and then call up Bowser after we have had the folks on the list who would care to testify. So with that, we'll start right out. First of all, some housekeeping, I guess. We have the minutes to approve from the March 28th meeting, and Representative Daniels has perused those minutes, and would you care to move those minutes, Representative?
Yes, Chair. Thank you. I move the minutes for, what was the date?
March 28th. You said you looked at them.
March 28th. I did. March 28th.
All in favor of the minutes of March 28th, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. And then one additional housekeeping duty we have to take care of because of a template not quite up to snuff and some members inadvertently not counted for in some of the meeting minutes. We have to go back and just make a correctional technical change to the minutes of January 25th, 2017, March 15th, 2017, February 28th of this year, March 6th, March 14th, March 15th, and March 20th. And again, this is just a technical thing that a couple of names were missed on the roster of those who are here or excused or whatever. So, again, just a technical addition to get the minutes technically correct. Motion to approve that. Motion, I would look for it.
Representative,
I think Representative Poston was the first to get at it. And again, just a technical addition to make the minutes correct. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The technical correction is approved, and thank you, members, for that. Let's start this morning. The reason for the hearing, again, during the break, Bowser came out with the proposed option for enforcement of the buffer law, and it aroused a lot of concern and comment and such, and we wanted to have this hearing today to find out why and what happened, and also to hear from those affected by this possibility, and also just to hear from the farmers with their concerns and issues in complying with Minnesota's 2015 buffer law. So first on the agenda, we have Alan Wold of the Bois de Sioux Watershed District, and on deck will be Greg Mickelson and Barry Nelson. Good morning, sir. Identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And before we get into that, we have a lot of folks to testify and asking you to hold your comments to 5 minutes at the most. Less would be much appreciated. And again, if you have a specific question for a testifier, we will take those when they finish their testimony rather than having everybody come back at the end. But keep your questions succinct and quick, and we'll get through this agenda today. So thank you much. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Anderson. I am Alan Wold, Wheaton, Minnesota, and I am Vice President of the Bois de Sioux Watershed District. Over 2,000 years ago in ancient Israel, the prophet Jeremiah stated, "The priests rule by their own authority." Well, that meant that they made up the law, but the law they made up was contrary to God's law. They assumed that if they had religious authority, that they could also expand that to civil authority. Jeremiah next said, "My people love it so." Why? The new rules were lax. What was illegal was now legal. Requirements became suggestions. And just like the priests of old, the agencies rule by their own authority, contrary to what the Constitution says, and that the highest authority was given to elected officials. So the issue today is not just Bowser, who has final authority. Agencies put their rules in par or even above legislative statute. The $500 fine for a buffer violation meant nothing. Instead, it's a $500 fine per linear foot. Agencies have abandoned the administration of law and instead become creators of law. They are not content with their constitutional role. They want to wear the legislative hat and make law. Sadly, many officials like it this way. The agency is a handy scapegoat for unpopular decisions. The buck is passed to an agency. Some people don't mind and even like layer upon layer of government. And some elected officials don't seem to mind statutory law being despised and ignored. Will it come to the point where agencies rule and run the state? Will agencies like Bowser become self-funding with cruel and oppressive fines? It need not be that way. Here is a solution to the problem. We are looking for some homegrown heroes to solve this problem. Your constituents voted you to be the best man to step up to the plate and hit a home run with the bases loaded. You are at the plate right now, and the opposing team, called the agency overreachers, wants to win this game. They hope you do not use the constitutional authority you have to send them to the dugout. They hope you won't knock the ball out of the park and jog the victory circle around the bases. The overreachers hope because you have the power and skill. So they try to trick you into thinking that the game is theirs and that running the state is best done by agencies. They hope you won't take steps to cut their budgets and prevent rulemaking authority. They hope you won't make them accountable to the various committees and hold agency heads responsible for their actions. They hope you will remain complacent. Your constituents who voted you to be the best man on the team want you to pick up the bat and hit a home run. You are all the heavy hitters. We want to cheer you on as you take the victory lap against the agency overreachers. Be a hero.
Thank you, Mr. Wold. Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you again. And next up is Greg Mickelson. On deck, Barry Nelson. Good morning, sir. Give us your name and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Greg Mickelson from Lake Crystal, Minnesota. I'm a farmer in Blue Earth County. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. Compliance is important to meet goals, but we don't have any goals. This law was supposed to be about clean water. The law states that alternative practices will be allowed if they meet or exceed the water quality standards that a buffer would provide. As of today, no water quality standards or goals are established to meet or exceed, so alternative practices can be approved. They can't be proven to be in compliance to avoid these fees. This is a problem. Since October of 2017, I have had two farm visits and numerous conversations to get my ditches and alternative practices approved. To date, I have nothing except a verbal commitment that they're in compliance. Without standards in this law, how will we make progress and improvements? A lot of research even shows that buffers may make water quality problems worse. This is another problem. $1 billion worth of Minnesota farmland has been affected by this law. This law should be repealed until we have standards set for what the buffers are supposed to be addressing and to make water quality better instead of worse. 20 years ago, we were told the conservation tillage would cure the water quality problems. It didn't happen because stream bank erosion was proven to be the problem, not farmers. Much has been done to prevent stream bank erosion. This is where the focus should be if anyone really cares about water quality. This is another problem. According to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, their sediment reduction plan, February of 2014, focusing on those areas with the greatest impact first or prioritizing particular issues can help maximize the impact or efforts and expenditures put forth. For example, the Le Sueur River watershed contributes approximately 24 to 30% of the total suspended solids to the Minnesota River, despite the fact that it only comprises 7% of the watershed of the Minnesota River. The Le Sueur and the Blue Earth River, only two of 13 rivers, contribute over half the annual sediment loads to the Minnesota River. So this is where the problem is. You have many good people in your agencies that are working to make water quality progress if they are left alone to follow science and proven practices. You also have some people that are following a different agenda. They should be eliminated. Bowser should not be funded anymore. Thank you.
Questions for the testifier? Mr. Mickelson, you mentioned you tried to are working with alternative practices. Could you mention what those practices are in general, and do you think that the local SWCD has the latitude to approve or disapprove of those practices?
I would certainly hope that they would. That's the contact person that I was supposed to go to. Negative slopes are alternative practice. There's even ways that you measure the ditch from certain areas to get in compliance and make sure I have my 16.5 feet. Mine is a county ditch, which is a misnomer. It's still a farmer-owned ditch that's under county jurisdiction. And we're trying to get him approved. I think that he is scared to make any approvals. I asked for numerous times a letter. He said he would provide it to me. But he's scared from the agencies above him, the people he has to report to, that his job is on the line if he approves some practice without getting every I dotted and T crossed. And so there's no local authority here.
Thank you, sir. Any other question? Representative Bly.
I'm just wondering, so is that your opinion about this local person, or do you have some knowledge that he's pressured by people above him?
Mr.
Well, a couple times he said he had health issues, but, I mean, October is a long time ago, and we've had numerous conversations, and I still haven't got my letter in the mail, which I would like to get to say that it's certified. And even following the rules, you know, some of the situations that I had would, I thought were probably not going to be in compliance, and the ones that I was sure that were going to be in compliance are not. I mean, the rules are very evasive to follow. It's hard to get a definitive answer, so he's having a tough time interpreting the law, what should be done for alternative practices, or just even the standard buffer law to follow it.
Representative Miller, were you finished?
As well as it seems like it's difficult to figure out what the penalties should be.
Okay. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bly, I believe I can answer that question, at least from the SWCDs within my district that I've talked to. And you say, are you conjecturing whether they are fearing this reprisal or something or not? I think the better thing to say that I found from my SWCDs and from my ditch authorities is that there is this there's information coming from Bowser that's inconsistent with the law. So they're trying to navigate through what that looks like and what that means. And they're given directives that are even more confusing to them. And they are being told by Bowser that if they don't comply, then Bowser's going to come in and do something about it. So, yes, they are acting in a state of fear, in a state of confusion, and they're trying to come up with things, and they're kind of guessing as they're throwing it out there. And one of the things, Mr. Chair, I need to emphasize at this point is that it is the ditch authorities and it's the SWCDs in assisting them that's supposed to be doing this stuff. His person at that SWCD office should not be fearing anything from Bowser. They should only be receiving clarified information from Bowser to help him be able to do his work. And so this is most certainly happening, and at least in my four counties, I can tell you that it's happening.
Any other questions? Mr. Mickelson.
Just one final clarification comment. I'm not even sure who I should go to get approval for these ditch practices. I went to my soil and water district. I've got a person down there that I've had a rapport with, and I hoped he could answer it. But, I mean, we got SWCDs. We got the Farm Credit or the Farm Service Agency that, you know, may could be involved, you know. I'm not sure who has the jurisdiction to even get my buffers, my ditches, my alternative practice approved. I'm just guessing and trying to follow through with what I deemed would be the appropriate chain of command. And maybe that's part of it, too, is I'm talking to the wrong agency. There's a lot of agencies involved.
Thank you, sir. We'll try to get some clarification when Mr. Jaski comes up. I've noticed, too, in looking over the statutes and the Bowser recommendations, a lot of it says being consistent with Bowser's guidelines. So I want to clarify exactly what that means. So thank you, Mr. Mickelson. Next up is
thank you very much.
Is Barry Nelson. Good morning, sir. Identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman Anderson and the members of the committee. My name is Barry Nelson from Hancock, Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm a sixth-generation farmer on the same land. The fact that our family has been farming the same land for over 150 years demonstrates that we are good stewards of the land. In recent years, I've attended several meetings about the buffer law. In a few of those meetings, a representative from the Board of Water and Soil Resources would speak. It became apparent early on that all they wanted to do was talk at us instead of with us. Myself and other farmers and landowners would try to get questions answered to our liking, and it seems we never did. I always went home disappointed and frustrated, not knowing what to do. Then one day we woke up and found that under the cover of darkness, the buffer law came to life. We kept asking, how could this happen? And one evening, a few of us got together to talk about it, and the same question came up again. The youngest person in the room, with what seemed to be frustration that we couldn't see it, stated very simply, we let this happen. We all knew she was right. She went on to say we have to start asking the right questions. Can they really do this? How did they get this done, and who was behind it? Well, we pretty well knew who was behind it. According to an article published January 15, 2015, in the Twin Cities Pioneer Press, Governor Dayton and Pheasants Forever really got things going at the Pheasant Summit. Governor Dayton states in the article that his proposal would create 125,000 acres of pheasant habitat and other wildlife habitat in Minnesota. So we know the goal. Joe Dugan of Pheasants Forever praises Governor Dayton in the article for his actions. This is why nobody with a Pheasants Forever sticker on their vehicle will ever hunt on my family's property. To our dismay, Pheasants Forever has become a political activist group against Minnesota agriculture. They are now outbidding farmers for land, only to give this land to the state so they have more places to hunt pheasants. Now Minnesota taxpayers have to pay for the maintenance on the property. The property is no longer revenue generating. Thus, local economies are hurt. Local governments and schools lose tax revenue. The odd thing is, we as farmers and landowners are continuously being told by the state that things must be planted with native plants and grasses. And yet the buffer law debacle was started because of the Chinese ringneck pheasant, a non-native species. When Bowser was speaking to us at these meetings, they would say things like, the state is asking for this. Because pretty much everyone in the room was behind the eight ball on this, we would leave it at that. I attended a meeting in St. Cloud about the new nitrogen rule. We were told at the meeting by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture that this is what the state wants. So in frustration, I asked, by the state, what do you mean? And they told us, well, our boss, Governor Dayton. I'm told that the MPCA is asking for more funding to hire more people to get through the permits. They already have more than 10 people per Minnesota county. They require so many permits for so many erroneous and ridiculous reasons that it's impacting the economy in a very negative way. They would just have more people to write more rules, to require more permits, to get more funding. It's becoming common knowledge that if you dispute the fines for violations, if you do not dispute the fines for violations, you get your permit faster. Let's call that what it is. MPCA collects a lot of dollars in fines and permit fees. If you don't dispute them, you get your permit. That sounds like corruption, plain and simple. Bowser has been sending communication and communication to our local elected officials threatening to take away funding, take away authority that has been given to our local elected officials by the Minnesota Constitution. This abuse of power is not what we want from the state. The counties that play nice and fall in line get their money. To Bowser Chairman Gerald Van Amberg, a professor at Concordia Moorhead, I would say the board is on the nameplate. You are the fall guy. After reading the press release a few days ago, you got thrown under the bus. You probably didn't see that coming, did you? Let not your heart be troubled, sir. We all know the truth. Bowser answers to Governor Dayton and do his bidding. Minnesota Department of Agriculture told me to my face, they answer to Governor Dayton and do his bidding. MPCA does the same, and I'm told so does the DNR. Four administrative agencies answering to one person. I'm asking you here today, as our elected officials, to take back that power of these non-elected administrative organizations that they are abusing without regard to rule of law or the constituents guaranteed under the Minnesota State Constitution. These administrative agencies are building an industry of rulemaking, regulation, and permitting. To the minions serving under Governor Dayton's administration, I say this. You may think you've accomplished a lot while our backs were turned. We were all too busy working to pay taxes to pay your salaries. Well, you got our attention, and we will be watching from now on. We know how to find out who does what and how they did it.
Could you wind up fairly quickly?
One statement left, I guess.
Thank you.
Sorry. Bowser getting their ears pinned back in recent days is a direct result of our wake-up call. I, for one, will not accept to be a pat on the head and go my merry way because the state has people smarter than we are working on this. That's a quote from the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Thank you.
Question from Representative Backer.
Yeah, Mr. Nelson, so you've personally been farming how long?
All my life. I'm 52 in June.
Okay. What, in farming right now, what would you say is the most stressful part of farming in today's right. environment?
That's actually a very good point. They're talking about funding for farmers because there's so much stress going on in our mental health and everything else. This right here is number one on the list of every farmer that I talk to at every get-together that we have. All the stuff MPCA is doing, Bowser, DNR, I can go on and on.
Follow-up, Representative?
So what I'm hearing from you, Mr. Nelson, is that, you know, guys, you've been working with them, but one of the challenges that you have is the character continues to change, and they continue to make it difficult you to feed the state and the country, and that's what's causing the most stress. You would agree with that?
100%. Our last speaker said it very well, right down the line. We don't know what we're supposed to do. The bar keeps changing, the carrot keeps moving, whatever.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Nelson, thank you much. Bill Schmidt, you're up, and then Gary Barrett is on deck. Identify yourself and proceed.
Okay, my name is Bill Schmidt, and I'm from Wheaton, Minnesota. I thank you for allowing me to speak here today. I'm a farmer who took some harvest pictures in 2016. What's combining? Do you have those? You probably saw them last year.
Does everybody have a copy of this, sir?
I have one more here. It's kind of beat up, but I want
to pass it down.
You have them wrong.
We have a couple of copies here. Our page can help you get that passed out, sir.
I only have one.
Okay.
That's all I have left.
They're moving around.
Okay. Continue, sir.
Okay, thank you. I took harvest pictures of this combine through what you would call, that's a public waterway you're combining through in 2016. And it was a pretty wet fall. Actually, I don't remember exactly, but we had about 1.8 inches of rain during the last few days, and that's us combining through that waterway. So you can see, the public waters were not a detriment to harvest, and in my opinion, do not exist. The man operating the combine in that picture was my 90-year-old dad, who's been harvesting crops through your designated public waters for 74 years. I'm glad I had the foresight to take these pictures of us harvesting this field from the fall of 2016. These pictures are obvious that to designate this a public waterway was a foolish proposal. Having had these pictures at last year's legislative session was proof enough to have had the buffer requirements thrown out. In my opinion, it's unfair to others who didn't have the foresight to take this initiative, hoping that the problem will resolve itself with common sense and rational thinking. I would classify public waters as something that has water in it 365 days a year. When I was informed that my land has public waters designations, I promptly contacted the DNR to show them that this land was not public waters. After conversing with the DNR representative, we tentatively planned to meet up after harvest was completed. I contacted her to set up a time, and was informed that their process review was for reviewing satellite images and that they had no interest in seeing these firsthand. I ask you, what kind of review process is this? I'd also like to add that Bowser's intimidation tactics through their fine schedule is not going unnoticed by not only us as farmers, but also well-informed citizens across the state. I ask you, how can a government entity act like this? Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Schmidt? Mr. Schmidt, Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. I have a question. Just, again, with the ruling or the proposed rule that had come out from Bowser, if you hadn't gotten this exempted, how many linear feet would have been impacted on your on that land? Do you have an estimate?
Not really. It's not a real wide ditch like some are. I guess it would probably be, I'm just going to say for a number, it would have been, since it curves through the field, It would probably have been 100 feet at a half a mile or more.
Follow-up, Representative?
Well, and I have, I actually, because I didn't read the rule through real intensely, but would you have been fined on both sides of the ditch?
Yes.
So 100 feet times 2 times $500 a linear foot.
Yeah, at least, right? Because
Mr. Schmidt, go ahead. Did you answer the questions?
Yes.
Okay.
I do not know the dollar amount. I guess I'm not.
So just to clarify, this picture in your photo, that is still classified as public water and requires a buffer?
Still in the inventory. It was removed from buffer requirements.
Okay. Question from Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, just to clarify here, as I haven't read it probably any closer than Representative Pearson. I don't know what's the deal here between the two. But it's pretty clear that it's up to. So it can start at a dollar fine and go up to 500. So it's a matter of what your county Bowser or water officials or land officials would choose to find somebody at. So it's not $100, $500 right off the bat, or the quick number would be $10,000. It could be $10.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, the current law is exactly what you just said, but the proposal by Bowser brings it up to $500 per linear foot. There's kind of a graduated scale that goes down after so many hundred yards and on like that. So I think what the testifier is, and you can clarify for yourself, I don't answer for you, but I think the question was asked from Representative Pearson about the proposed Bowser rules making would be the $500 per foot, and that would have been mandated by this rule.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
No, that's actually not how I read it, and it would probably take a couple of lawyers and a judge to figure out exactly how it is at the end of the day. But to say that it's a $10,000 fine here on a public record is taking liberties with the facts, the way I've read this and the way it's been explained to me. So I would like to know, Mr. Chair, how much the Chinese tariffs on pork, soybeans, a number of other things. I mean, I'm reading, as I've read all of this, it's a small number of farmers that are being truly affected by this. Most of them have, at one time, one way or another, come to compliance. Reluctantly, I would agree, and I believe you have a complaint on this. And all the people who have talked about it. But my question is, if we're going to have a hearing on this, are we going to have a hearing on what the cost of these tariffs from the Chinese on our soybeans, farmers, and pork? I would certainly like to have the Jobs Committee have one on what's going to happen with the steel tariffs and how many jobs that's going to cost and how much in fines and losses. As I taught you, I've told you I've been around this state, so I've got some good farmer friends. I have one that went to bed at night with X number of dollars of soybeans and woke up the next morning $4,000 poorer. So this is all kind of related here, but we should have a hearing on that too, Mr. Chair.
That would not be in this committee in terms of the jobs thing and whatever.
No,
and
but I mean on the soybean, pork, and others.
Well, we are greatly enlarging the scope, but yeah, those things are in progress. Nothing has been determined yet, and price of soybeans surprisingly has come back. I'm not going to say it's going to stay there. The weather outside, I think, is a big factor in why these markets are coming back, but to have a meeting on that at this point, I think, would be early. Representative Clark Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really agree with you that it's appropriate to have our guests from across the state testify first, but I think it's important that we provide some context, and I'm in possession of a letter from Governor Dayton and a letter from Mr. Jaschke, and I just want to quote just a couple of things out of there so we're in the current time. And Governor Dayton on April 9 wrote, and he said, I urge the board, in this case the Board of Water and Soil Resources, to take swift action to reconsider the new proposed ATO administrative penalty order. If the board perceives the need for further options, I urge you to continue through public engagement. The success of the buffer law so far has occurred without penalties. Let us continue to work together with the agriculture community to maintain that approach to the full extent possible. And then Mr. Jasky on April 10th wrote a letter, and I'll just quote the last statement, and that is that the Bowser Board Committee is scheduled to meet this Thursday. That's today, I believe. Given the response, we expect the proposal to be rejected and not considered further. I think that's the reality of what's happened with this order. And I'd also like to remind the committee that I applauded the work of Representative Torkelson, the author of the buffer bill. He worked hard. He's my neighbor, and I really applauded his work in marshaling that bill through the legislature. And he worked hard. He worked very appropriately to make sure that farmers were heard. I supported him in that, and I think we succeeded in that. And right now we're at 98% compliance on the buffer law. So let's keep that context in mind, what the real situation is today as we go forward. Thank you.
Representative Johnson, just to comment, if we're 98%, which is what Bowser says we are, why the need, why even the thought to have this additional penalty structure? And we'll hear from Bowser. And I agree that they basically pulled us off the table. They pulled back from it. But we'd like to find out how this came about, just the very thought of why it was necessary. And we hope to hear from Representative from John Jasky later on in the hearing. Representative Backer again.
Yeah, Chair Anderson, thank you. I did look up the letter online. The penalty amount is determined based on the following table. It's on linear foot. So from 0 to 100 is $200 to $500 per linear foot. 100 to 500 is $50 to $200. If you have 500 to 1,000 linear foot, that's $30 to $50 per linear foot. And if it's over 1,000, that's $25 to $30 per linear foot. It goes, in no instance may the penalty be more than $500 per linear foot. So like what my constituent, Mr. Schmidt, would do, if I'm doing the math right, you have about a mile, that's 5,280 feet times 30, that's $138,000. So one of the things, and I appreciate your comment, Mr. Representative Johnson, but the fact is we had an agency last week that gone wild. This is absurd. These people produce property tax in our area, and for the governor to come out and say, oh, they did a wrong job, he appoints those people. So I think there was arrogance in that meeting to go after these fine individuals and just cause this stress. So I'll save my other comments later.
I have a couple more questions, but again, reminder, we have a lot of folks to testify and then have Mr. Jasky coming up also. We have to be done by a soft 12 o'clock. We could go a little bit past 12, but we have a lot of folks to get to. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will be real brief, but I want to just clarify for Representative Johnson, and I do appreciate the comments that you made, but the reason why we're having this hearing is because we, as Representative Becker said so well, we have an agency that acted up abruptly. And my concern is when we're looking at this, this is a broader topic. This comes into nitrogen rules. This goes into ditch mowing. We can go on and on. And what's consistently happened with these agencies is that they have pushed forward things. And if we push back, I've been impressed with the response by all the people in this room. We push back, and the previous testifier even said that. We're paying attention now. We're speaking up. So they reeled back. But what happens this summer? This summer when they can make a similar rule, and there's nothing that we can do because we're not in session. I think it is very important that we discuss this right now and we present a very clear message to the governor and to these agencies that we are watching, like that testifier said, and we're going to have to deal with this now. I'm thankful that they're going to probably pull this rule off, but what happens if they bring it up again this summer? We need to talk about it now.
Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. So I wanted to support the comments that Mr. Mahoney was making. Your answer to him was that the tariffs and the effect of them are in process, but this rule is in process too. So, I mean, I think that I would like to hear how farmers are going to be impacted by the tariffs, and I think it is something that we should look at and try to take testimony. And also to Representative Miller, who mentioned that we won't be in session, you could call a hearing in the off season, and we could discuss whatever changes there may be. So it's not like we can't do anything. We certainly can. But I think it's what farmers are facing with soybeans and pork and the other things, and to say nothing of the biofuels changes that may be happening. I think there's much there that we could talk about that will affect farmers and cause great stress to them.
Thank you. And those things are on the federal level. We are here at the state level. Mr. Schmidt, thank you very much for your testimony. Were you wrapped up? Or a final comment?
Yeah, I'm good.
Thank you very much. Gary Burnt, next up, then Becky Young. Becky Young, then Ron Staples, Gary Haugen, Rod Beyer following that. Good morning, sir. Take a chair and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, Gary Barron, needs to be noted, I guess, I am a farmer, and I also sit on the North Fork River Watershed Board. One of the problems is what they're talking about now, this new penalties. We're unsure because my watershed took on the responsibility of enforcing the new buffer law. Bowser basically dictated to us what we were going to do for penalties. It does starts off at $100 and progresses up to $500 per day, which is just excessive. It's not always time to get it done in the time frame they talk about. Number two big problem with all of these buffer laws is, where does it start? We have the legal description of the drainage ditch, but where do you start measuring the buffer from? Bowser says it starts at the top of the soil. But we have a legal ditch, but the buffer doesn't start till here. This can be 3 feet and 5 feet away from the legal ditch. Every time you clean the ditch, this top of the spoil moves further and further away from the legal ditch. This needs to be figured out. Myself, I think the buffer should start at the legal description of the ditch. That would make sense, and everybody knows where we're at. Right now, the watershed that I'm on, they're out there to put in stakes in the ground as to where it's at. This is difficult when we don't know for sure where to start measuring. As a farmer, we no longer run four-row equipment. This equipment is huge, and for us to encroach by 6 inches or a foot at some times is inevitable. I've been doing this since I got out of the service in 69, farming with my dad. This equipment is huge. But if a sprayer happens to drift over one spot a little bit, or the tillage equipment drifts over a little bit and there's not grass there, you're in violation. There's got to be some giveaway here of some sort. It's excessive. There are some other things I'd like to bring up. Sorry if I'm a little bit hesitant. This is a very intimidating situation.
You're doing very well.
We're at the watershed. We were working on the one watershed, one plan, how the different watersheds on the Crow River could work together. How we came up with a 170-page document with a 200-page appendix is beyond my understanding. I could go on about that forever, but I'll stop on that part of it. We need to know as farmers and as watershed managers where the law is, where we stand, and there's got to be some compromise here as to the reality. You can take a piece of paper and say, no, this is it, this is where we're going to be, but to go out there and do it physically is totally different. There is no way of doing that. Last item I'd like to bring up, I represent Stearns County. In my watershed, we represent 64% of the real estate in that watershed, 71% of the population. We have two managers out of five, which gives us a 40% vote. We asked Bowser by petition to increase it to five managers so that we could have a more fair representation from Stearns County. It was denied, or at least we was told it was denied. I have never received the document, and that meeting was held in late September.
Thank you, Mr. Burnt. Any questions? Mr. Burnt, answering for yourself, do you feel that your watershed has the latitude to come up with alternative practices, things like that?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much. Becky Young and Ron Staples, both from Stevens County, come on up and introduce yourselves, and let's hear your testimony. Go ahead.
Good morning. Ron Staples, Stevens County farmer and county commissioner. Chairman Anderson, I would like to thank you for the time, opportunity to testify before your committee today. I would like to walk you through the process that Stevens County has been through since the buffer law was passed in 2015. In March of 2017, Stevens County accepted jurisdiction for the enforcement of the buffers. We did this to keep the enforcement local because we did not want state agency Bowser to come to Stevens County and to do the enforcement, potentially to impose fines on our landowners that have not put buffers in by the deadlines. During the summer, the Planning Commission approved the land use ordinance with the APO as part of this fine structure. During that process, our county attorney told us that we could not impose penalties of more than $500 because of the statute 103F.48. Clearly states that monetary penalties are up to $500. In October, the county approved the land use ordinance and sent it to Bowser. We got a letter from Bowser on November 7th with the guidelines that we needed to change before the ordinance would be accepted by Bowser. The suggested changes were it should be revised to remove the arbitrary dollar amount, and it should reflect penalties with the allowable range and frequency for both the initial and repeat violations. These amounts need to reflect the amounts that Bowser has in their model ordinance. In November, we had a conference call with Commissioner Jasky, Assistant Director Weirens, Tom Giles, Buffer Coordinator, and several other Bowser employees to come to a resolution, and were unsuccessful, as they told us the APO had to be consistent to the language provided by Bowser. On February 6th, we received a notice from Bowser that states, Stevens County is not with jurisdiction, according to Minnesota Statute 103F.48. The county's authority to use Minnesota Statute 103B101 Subdivision 12A is conditioned on Bowser's determination of consistency with Bowser's board-approved APO plan. As a result of this determination, Bowser is obligated to enforce provisions of the buffer law in Stevens County until such time the county is to be determined with jurisdiction. So at this point, we have had the jurisdiction taken from Stevens County, and Bowser will be doing the enforcement of the buffer law in Stevens County until we can come to some agreement with Bowser. We as county commissioners are in a very difficult position when our county attorney is telling us that the black letter of the law states that it is up to $500, and Bowser says it can be up to $500 per day. I believe all we want is the same goal of cleaner water, so why does this have to be so difficult? Stevens County's priority right now is to get back jurisdiction from Bowser if it truly can be taken from us by Bowser, because the landowners do not want Bowser to come to Stevens County and do the enforcement of the buffer law. Thank you.
Questions, comments? And I think that's a key here. And again, I mentioned the word consistency. That kind of rings throughout, and we need to find out what is meant by consistency. Representative Banker.
Yeah, I'm Commissioner Staples. does your county attorney believe that from their interpretation that you guys have been you've been consistent with the statutory law that was passed?
I'm going to confer to our county attorney because he's going to come up here and testify also.
Okay, well, and then I'll save my questions to after all the Stevens County people testify.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
You want to do it right now?
Well, let him testify.
Okay, go ahead, ma'am.
Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Young. I represent the Stevens County Board of Commissioners this morning. Stevens County continues to experience frustration for not being able to implement the buffer ordinance with an APO that is in compliant with plain reading a statute. Bowser's been tasked with drafting model policies. Counties must be consistent with these policies, and I think we've just had that conversation come up here. Nor does it say that we must be equal or exactly the same. The newest draft of this APO makes this worse, and it makes it difficult to have a common-sense compliance approach with local landowners. I appreciate the communication we've seen from the governor's office and Bowser on their backing off of this APO, but it hasn't been just this APO that they've taken liberties with. It's the one that is on record, and we are a perfect example of that. Our goal as a county and a state should be able to work towards landowner compliance with the buffer law. We have the intent, we've heard the intent of the newly drafted APO is to give counties additional options for meeting compliance. To our knowledge, counties were not widely included in this feedback prior to this draft, and we were never asked for feedback. As one of approximately 8 counties that have accepted jurisdiction but have not passed an ordinance that Bowser will accept, we believe our feedback would have been valuable to this process. The proposed APO is far worse than the existing draft policies Bowser's previously published. Stevens County believes that the agency is taking liberties of statute and has drafted policies that are asking counties to work contrary to statute. Our board simply will not do that. Furthermore, we are required to draft a policy that is consistent, not exactly the same as the model policies. But time and again, Bowser's refused to accept our APO. If we're looking for other draft policies, could they possibly support ours? The ordinance that Stevens County has legally adopted caps all cumulative penalties at $500. Nor in statute is there a measurement of time, distance, or property. The most recent APO wording was determined by Bowser, not by the legislators that were elected to serve. We do not see this as Bowser's responsibility, but our elected officials. In our personal story to move towards jurisdiction, I draw your attention to 4 documents that were included. First is Mr. Jaski's testimony to a joint Senate committee on February 2017, where he's asked numerous follow-up questions, and he makes on record that it is up to $500 penalty. The second is our letter that outlines our request from our county attorney that asked them to provide case law examples of where else in statute it's permissible to interpret a fine structure, and they were unable to do that. We have a letter also that's from Bowser to our county determining us to be without jurisdiction, even though we have a legally binding ordinance in place that's compliant with statute. And fourth, there's a letter from the county to Bowser stating that the board does not accept their determination of being without jurisdiction. We're asking for your help. The county wants to work with landowners to come into compliance. The Board of Commissioners is best suited to do this at the local level to ensure a fair, uniform, timely process. We did post comments on the proposed changes, but we're asking for your support to help stop this overreach on policy from a state agency and help us move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Questions, comments? If not, go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Aaron Jordan. I'm Stevens County Attorney. And do I have your permission to be added to the agenda?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Let's hear your testimony.
I'll get right to the brass tacks. The issue that we have in Stevens County is there's no definition in the law of what a violation actually is. So the penalty says up to $500. It doesn't say, it doesn't define what a violation is. So up to $500 per parcel, per linear foot. How often is this penalty assessed? Because it's not like any other crime or any other penalized thing where you have, let's say, let's take an assault, okay? Are you going to charge somebody $100 for every minute they're beating on somebody? What are you going to do? And that's what we have no definition here of what the time frame is for a penalty. And I think we'd all be served, Bowser intuited would be best served if you give us a little definition in the law of what a violation actually is. Is it every 6 months that's a new violation? Is it every year? Is it every 2 years? What is a violation? And my opinion to my board was reading this law, and all it says is up to $500. It doesn't say anything else. I cannot legally advise them to follow the model ordinance. I cannot do that. It's illegal. It's black and white. There's no argument in my mind that what Bowser has in the model ordinance is not allowed by law. And I'm not bashing on Bowser. I'm not. I'm a Pheasants Forever member. I'm on their board. I love water cross section. Okay, mine is pure legal analysis. You cannot have this penalty as it's outlined in the model ordinance. And all of you can help us by giving a little bit of definition in this law. Tell us what it is. Tell Bowser what it is so we can stop having this argument. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Question or comment from Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the way the law is written now, it is very vague because it does say that the fine can be up to $500. I've offered an amendment, written an amendment to that to specify that would be per parcel per year so that we could prevent this from happening in the future. This is, even if this rule is, you know, rescinded this afternoon, we want to prevent this type of action in the future. And so, I would hope that we could get this amendment added to a bill in this session so that we could, you know, prevent this from going down this road in the future.
Representative Backer.
I don't know if you can or Ms. Young can answer this question.
Excuse me.
Thank you, Chair. Excuse me. What percentage in Stevens County are you guys at for buffer compliance?
I'll let Becky make up the numbers.
Ms. Young?
I can't answer that specifically. The numbers that we've been given, I think, are far less. I can tell you on the public ditches, we only have one ditch that's gone through redetermination and has the established buffer from the ditch system. That doesn't mean that they're not out there. It's in the 80% range.
So it's a high percentage.
County, yeah, it's a high percentage state or countywide for us.
And overall,
go ahead.
Mr. Chair, follow up. Overall, what has been the feelings of the landowners? Have they cooperative? Are you guys arm wrestling with people to get this through? What's been your thing on the buffer?
Well, I think you can hear from the testimony.
Mr. Jordan, go ahead.
Oh, thank
go
you. Ahead. Sorry. You can hear from the testimony today that it's fear. People don't know what is required of them, and it's constantly changing. So I think what needs to happen is we need to come up with a plan and stick to it and quit coming out with new information. I do agree that this latest round of the per lineal foot penalty really upset the apple cart. And I think, in part, I can't quite blame Bowser for that because it's probably in direct reaction to what we in Stevens County proposed, which is opposing their first model ordinance. And I think there's a realization with Bowser that we're probably on firm ground with our legal analysis, and so they had to come up with something. And that's where we're at.
Thank you, sir.
Two more quick questions.
Vice Chair Backer, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Anderson. In your opinion, who has the authority to set land ordinance? Is it the county or a state agency?
Mr. Jordan.
Stevens County has the authority to do it, and that power is granted to us through the state.
Okay.
Representative?
From your interpretation of the law that has passed, from your opinion, do you believe that Bowser has the legal authority to remove jurisdiction from Stevens County?
Mr. Jordan.
Thank you. I believe that we have complied with the law, that we are consistent with what, to the best of our ability, we are consistent with what Bowser has proposed, and that we should retain jurisdiction.
Follow-up, Vice Chair.
Yeah, last follow-up. Thank you. And that's a thing. I appreciate that, and I've had conversations with Bowser on this. There's no place in the law that says that Bowser can remove jurisdiction. Another example of an agency gone wild. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Gary Haugen, and on deck is Rod Fire. Good morning, sir. Identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Gary Haugen. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify here before you today. I'm a manager on the Upper Minnesota River Watershed Board and a third-generation farmer on our Century Farm near Clinton, Minnesota. Our watershed is a local agency given the task of implementing drainage, ditch, flooding, and water quality programs. We have worked for many years to establish good working relationships with local landowners, but the continuous changes and amendments being made to the buffer law is greatly eroding that trust. The buffer law is in direct conflict with what Bowser has always stressed to watersheds, this being the prioritize, target, and measure philosophy. There are many areas of the state where buffers will have no impact on water quality. The state has already spent a lot of money on the watershed restoration and protection strategy and the PTM app, which will be used to find and correct problems. Give these programs a chance and stop trying to implement a one-size-fits-all program. As a landowner and farmer, I'm very disappointed, to say the least, in the proposed amendment to the APO put out this past week. Myself and two of my neighbors have experienced firsthand what happens when you try to question the accuracy of the public waters inventory. To be proposing huge fines on landowners when there are so many mistakes in the public waters inventory is very unfair. Myself and two of my neighbors recently tried to get the DNR to remove a mile and a half of our ditch from the public waters inventory based on evidence we had that it was man-made, therefore disqualifying it to be on the public waters. We first had an engineering firm that the DNR frequently used run a pre-settlement model on the area adjacent to our ditch. The model proved our point that it was man-made. The DNR refused to accept the results of that model. The local SWCD and Big Stone County Board of Commissioners sent letters to the DNR on our behalf asking them to remove this from the public waters inventory. The DNR still refused. We filed a writ with the Court of Appeals. The DNR, in their brief written by the Attorney General's office, argued that our appeal was time-barred, stating we had our chance back in 1980 to appeal. We filed this case on August 10, 2017, and on September 25th, the county found a 1911 map behind a filing cabinet for a proposed county ditch adjacent to our land in this ditch. We found the corresponding viewers' reports at the Minnesota Historical Society. This evidence proved without a doubt our ditch was man-made. We immediately sent this evidence to the DNR and Attorney General asking if they now would remove this from the PWI. Instead, the Attorney General's office immediately filed a motion to the court to block this evidence on the grounds that it was presented too late. The court agreed, it's hard to get evidence in late, and the court agreed that it could not be entered and ruled this case in the agent in the DNR's favor, stating they are the experts and they give deference to them in these matters. The DNR also argued the statute reads the commissioner may correct errors in the inventory. It doesn't say they shall, and they use that in this case. As landowners, we were given no chance to present witnesses before a neutral arbiter or even give an oral argument before the court. There isn't a fair process at this time to correct errors in the public waters inventory. The DNR used methods that are outdated in 1980 to create the PWI. Since this case has been in the news, I have had many landowners contact me about errors on their land. One 10 miles from me, the ditch doesn't even show up on the 1938 photo. And there's other ones. A ditch has to have 2 square miles of watershed to be on the public waters inventory. I have 70 acres behind my house that they included in the watershed of this ditch. I am a certified ditch viewer with the Minnesota Viewers Association, and I can tell you for a fact water from that area has never ran to that ditch, at least not since NOAA. For Bowser to be intent on finding an enforcement when the buffer map has so many mistakes is simply outrageous. When as landowners we have to go up against the Attorney General's office, who seems to be all about winning and not doing what is right, we have a huge problem. In 1980, the DNR sent a letter to Big Stone County when they were doing this inventory, and there were some concerns, and they told the county in this letter that don't worry, landowners have every right to crop, till, pasture, public waters inventory. The only thing that's going to change is that they're going to need a permit if they want to change the course or direction of that water course. So we all know what's happened with that today. So this started back in 1980, this trust thing between agencies. So I just want to say, where is the honesty and integrity of our agencies gone? There, it just doesn't seem to be any.
Thank you, Mr. Hogan. Questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next up, we have Rod Beyer and Jamie Beyer. I don't know if they're both here. Rod Beyer? Very good. Identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Rod Beyer. Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing me time to speak. I'm a farmer from Traverse County. On our farm, we raise corn, soybeans, wheat, sugar beets, grapes. I raise pheasants to be released into the wild, and we also have honeybees. My family drinks water from our well. We eat fish from our lakes. We swim in the water. We also enjoy watching the wildlife and hunting on hundreds of acres of farmland that our family has turned into wildlife habitat voluntarily. I strongly oppose the APO proposed by the Bowser Board and Mr. Jaski. I do not appreciate how they tried to quietly fast-track the obscenely large penalties to a bogus law. For 1 foot of non-compliance, the Bowser fine would be $158,400 for one buffer mile. This is absolutely excessive, and that includes if you're out of compliance on 1 foot, they still fine you on the other feet that you are in compliance on, as I read it. For those of you that do not have a farm background, I would say that it is similar to a traffic violation. If you get a speeding ticket, you probably get a fine for $110. You don't get a ticket for $110 for every mile that you had been speeding. Also, having a Bowser comment period for only 2 weeks during the month of April, when they assumed farmers would be busy and legislators were out of session, should be a major concern of ours. Government agencies should require all stakeholders to provide input. Bowser is a classic example of what happens to government when there's not enough oversight. Why are employees being paid by Bowser allowed to be on the board to make policies for themselves? Why are there not any full-time farmers on this board? In my opinion, if this board is allowed to continue to function, it should be restructured to have a majority of farmers to create policy that would be timely and relevant. Representatives from state agencies should not fill board member seats. This practice leaves all government agencies to be run unchecked by other government agencies. Not only is the APO created by Bowser and Mr. Jaski ridiculous, but so are many of the current rules. I listened to Mr. Jaski testify yesterday to the senators, and I have several points to contradict the story that he is telling. On the map disputes, we were never allowed to actually contest our public waters designation. Our only avenue was to appeal to Bowser employees and the DNR. Shouldn't there be a more independent board, not one whose success is dependent on blind buffer compliance, that could objectively use current technology and actual testimony to review each case? Number two, local control. Mr. Jaski keeps telling us that counties can create their own policies. This is not true. According to letters Mr. Jaski signed himself, our county has approved and amended its buffer ordinance several times, and Bowser keeps rejecting the county's policy, stating it needs to reflect Bowser's own harsher penalties beyond the statutory $500 fine. We have local soil and water conservation district managers advocating jail time, which is encouraged by Bowser guidelines. We keep hearing about compensation. There is nothing reasonable or readily available. Right now, CRP contracts are closed, and I'm also required to pay property tax on my acres that I'm no longer allowed to farm anymore. Number four, we are promised alternatives to the buffer. We have only been offered alternatives in addition to the buffer. And again, on paper, SWCDs were put in charge but are given absolutely no authority to exercise their discretion. SWCDs are paid and managed by Bowser. Don't forget that. Don't let them pretend that they are separate agencies. In conclusion, I was not surprised and disturbed about the APO like our governor was. This overreach and distrust is what farmers have been feeling about Bowser for many years. Bowser is constantly attacking family farms with one bad rule, suggestion, law, APO. It's one thing after another, It's the buffer. It's the nitrogen rule. It's the rain tax. It's ditch mowing. This is why farmers are reluctant to work with government. We have zero trust with them because time and time again, when we give them an inch, they take a mile. So I'm not asking for much. Just repeal the buffer and dismantle and defund Bowser. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Next up, we have Jamie Beyer, then Kirby Hepfer, please. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning. My name is Jamie Beyer. I serve as the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the Policy Committee for allowing me to speak. My husband and I farm, and my hobby is working as a part-time watershed administrator. So believe me when I say I talk about farm families and government policy all day, every day. We are subject on our farm to 17 acres going under the buffer. So make no mistake, everyday farmers are impacted by this buffer law. When I first read Bowser's linear foot rule, I looked for my trash can because I thought I was going to be sick, and I'm being 100% honest here. These penalties are outrageous. Farm families in Minnesota are used to risk and high levels of stress, but the governor's administration is coordinating attacks on us, and these attacks are wagered by state agencies, and their target is the Minnesota family's basic right to farm. The regulations and fines are coming from multiple agencies hard and fast. My family farm is 3 hours west of here, and it used to feel really far from St. Paul. But over the past 3.5 years, administrators sitting in office chairs in St. Paul offices have been relentless in their persecution of the family farm. Right now alone, family farms are dealing with a nitrogen rule from the Department of Ag that is based on 30-year-old data. We are dealing with this sudden proposed ditch mowing permits from MnDOT that dictates access to our own private property. We are dealing with politicized water reports from MPCA, and now we're going to have to deal with Bowser's soil loss rule and the rain tax. And looming in the background, of course, is this Bowser buffer law. We all agree that the proposed foot penalty is outrageous. The current fines are outrageous, too, and boldly violate Minnesota statute. The Bowser board and staff must be held accountable. The penalties are not the only problem. This buffer law was bad from the start. Instead of being clean water, we're doing mean water. Bowser has fattened its ranks and siphoned money for buffer enforcement. Our SWCD added a full-time employee to deal with buffers. And I received an email last week introducing me to one of my watershed's two regional buffer and soil loss specialists. He let me know that he had been charged with the task of evaluating and assisting buffer enforcement, not compliance, enforcement. Thank you, Bowser. Thank you for organizing another means to monitor, pressure, and harass the state's local government authority. The buffer law is just the tip of the Bowser rule iceberg. If you have waded through the water quality bureaucracy of one watershed, one plan, the soil loss rules, the buffer law acceleration nonsense, Bowser has a variety of strategies to ensure compliance, including the actual threat of grant ineligibility, peer pressure, and flat-out force. All as a means to make local government units enforce Bowser rules for Bowser as required by Bowser. We're really backed into a wall. The Minnesota Soybean Growers Association represents Minnesota's 27,000 soybean farmers. We are strong, we are informed, and we are active. And there are more than 300,000 Minnesota jobs who are directly related to farming. That's five times the size of the Mayo Clinic. Just like healthcare, today's farming is loaded with technology and research. I need you to stop allowing state agencies and policymakers from treating me like I'm Charles Ingalls. State agencies are grossly out of step with modern farming standards. The amount of ag research and technology has far outpaced these state agencies. They aren't up to date, and their advice and guidance are often irrelevant. Farming today is nothing like it was 20 years ago, and it's certainly not as it was 30 years ago. Minnesota state agencies need to wake up and take a hard, deep look at what farming in Minnesota is today and what's coming down the pipeline. Stop looking three decades behind. Governor Dayton said it best when he found Bowser's penalties surprising and disturbing. How can you stop surprising and disturbing government rules and policies? Stop funding surprising and disturbing government agencies. Stop employing surprising, and disturbing government employees. Farm families all across the state are depending on you to do the right thing. On behalf of the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association, thank you for your service, and we're all watching aptly for something right and fair to come of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beyer. You offer a unique perspective. Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions, next up, Mr. Hepburn. And anybody else in the audience who would care to testify not on the list, make it be known to us. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Kirby Hepburn. I'm president of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association, corn, soybean, and alfalfa farmer from DeGraff, Minnesota. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning on behalf of our nearly 7,000 Minnesota Corn Growers Association members in regards to the public comments on the APO that Bowser Amendment that we're all talking about. Although Minnesota's corn growers have supported efforts by Bowser to improve and implement the buffer law, including extensive support of research led by the University of Minnesota to develop alternative practices, we do have significant concerns, both procedurally and substantially as well, with proposed amendment to the administrative penalty order. To start with, we're deeply troubled by the process through which the proposed amendment was submitted and considered by Bowser. The amendment was brought before Bowser on March 28, 2018, only one day after it was raised in the Buffer Soils and Drainage Committee. There was no prior notice to the public or discussion from interested stakeholders, such as Minnesota corn growers, regarding the underlying issue. The request for public comments was published in the State Register on April 2, 5 days after the request for public comments was approved by the board. Even though the State Register generally requires submission of items to be published at least 6 days prior to publication, and the request for public comments only provides 14 days for us to respond. The lack of advance notice and the sheer speed of this process suggest inappropriate efforts by Bowser to rush these significant and highly controversial modifications through under a veil of secrecy without an open public dialogue. Minnesota corn growers is also concerned that Bowser lacked the authority to approve the original administrative penalty order and lacks the authority to adopt any modifications or amendments to such plan outside the formal rulemaking process. These are the very criticisms that Minnesota corn growers and several others, obviously, have raised regarding the proposed modifications to the administrative penalty order. Accordingly, Minnesota corn growers request that Bowser engage in a formal rulemaking proceedings with respect to any future proposed modifications to the administrative penalty order plan. Aside from the procedural issues discussed, we also have some other significant concerns. Obviously, the massive fines are the wrong remedy. As previously stated, assessing financial penalties up to $100 or $500 per linear foot for non-compliance is simply absurd. Based on what we've heard, the primary reasons for why a farmer may not be in compliance by November 1st is either due to the fact they need more clarity on how they get their farm into compliance, or the farmer is facing financial stress in their operation. Assessing these penalties could cost the farmer tens of thousands of dollars. It is the wrong remedy when we're facing economic stress. To conclude, Minnesota Corn Growers Association has played a positive role in making a difference improving water quality. We have invested significant corn grower dollars in research to discover new and alternative practices. We've employed our advocacy to shape a more workable policy, and we have sponsored seminars and provided information to help farmers come in compliance. We strongly urge that the proposed amendment penalties be immediately withdrawn. Focus on more effective measures and incentives to help farmers achieve compliance that we all support.
Thank you, Mr. Hepper. questions, comments? Anybody? We have Tom Peterson and Kevin Papp yet to testify, but is there anybody else in the audience that's not on the list who would care to testify? Is those two work their way down? You know the routine. Identify yourselves and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And I'm not going to repeat a lot about what has been said today, but we were concerned and very opposed to this process when it was put forward this last week. We shared that with both Bowser, some of the Bowser committee members, as well as the administration. And we were glad to see this apparently pulled back. I will attend the meeting at 3:30 today of the Soils and Buffer Subcommittee, and hopefully that is what happens today. MFU has always advocated for a low fine. It's not a surprise. I stopped yesterday and went through my computer and looked at and remembering a lot of the conversations. If you remember when we started with the buffer law, we originally had even been talked about a $20,000 fine when this first came out. And we got it down to a $500 fine, and I found this, what Bowser had put out in the summer after we had passed the initial buffer fine, and it said, you know, in the end it says, who's responsible for enforcement? And then it says, if a landowner fails to install a buffer on identified waters, penalties may include a $500 fine. And, you know, in my recollection of what we talked about in all our meetings and everything is, you know, the idea was to build up and work with landowners, and the fine was really an afterthought. And, you know, we never talked about per foot. We talked about maybe per parcel or per farm, but it was purposely, in my mind and Farmers Union mind, left that way. MFU is also concerned as why are farmers not in compliance? President Hetfer, he just mentioned a few of them. What we hear from our members is concerned. Some farmers are still working out. We may have 98% compliance on public waters, but not public ditches. That's the next one that comes this fall. And so getting into a dispute of whether you need, some of our members are still working through, do they need a 16 or a 50-foot buffer with DNR? As was just mentioned on CRP, CRP's full. When I talk to farmers and say, are you going to do your buffer this fall? They say, yeah, I'm thinking about doing CRP, which actually would require a larger buffer than a 16-foot buffer. But I ask them, have you been in to talk to that? You might want to talk to the FSA about this because that's an issue. And so timing, planting, you know, here we are, almost the middle of April. It's going to be late. It's going to be a late harvest. And so those are some of the concerns. Also, haying and grazing. I think I want to mention that to the committee as you're looking at what you can hay and what you can graze, but really when you can harvest that hay, because if you're planting natives, as I understand, you're not going to be able to harvest the hay till August 15th. And so there's some issues that we're working through there. And last year, you, the legislature, did approve a one-year waiver, and that is something that we looked at. The governor actually mentioned that he put the waiver in his letter that came yesterday. Representative Haley has a bill that would also grant a one-year waiver, and we'd urge you to consider and look at that. And with that, I appreciate the opportunity to provide a few comments.
Thanks, Mr. Peterson.
My name is Kevin Papp, president of Minnesota Farm Bureau. We're the largest farm organization in the state with over 30,000 members. I also farm in Blue Earth County. Thank you for this opportunity and for this time. Minnesota Farm Bureau strongly opposes this amendment to the Bowser Administrative Penalty Order. In fact, our members have submitted over 300 comments just in this short time. You know, agriculture has a vital stake in respecting and protecting our state's resources, both for ourselves and for future generations, while remaining a leader in feeding the world. Minnesota farmers will take second place to no one in our commitment to the water, land, and air where we raise our crops, care for our animals, and raise our families. We believe a voluntary, incentive-based, locally designed and implemented process with technical and cost-share support is agriculture's continual improvement in the conservation of our natural resources. We believe in a regulatory process that is transparent, consistent, accountable, and cost-effective with open, fair, and early stakeholder involvement. That was not the case in this proposed amendment. We ask for open and transparent and stakeholder involvement in the future because we know there will be more. Minnesota Farm Bureau appreciates this opportunity to testify and looks forward to working together with this committee, other legislators, government agencies, and others to develop new methods and technologies and, when necessary, regulations to help conserve our natural resources and protect our environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pat. Questions, comments from members? If not, thank you very much. And seeing nobody else in the audience, oh, ma'am, go ahead. We have about a half hour left, so thank you for being here today, and identify yourself and proceed.
I'm Beth Wold. I'm a housewife, but the only reason I'm at this podium is because I want you to know that there were two comments made that very few farmers are affected by the buffer. So I would like the farmers who are affected by the buffer rule to stand. So, and they represent probably not all the farmers, but many farmers.
Thank you, ma'am. Want to testify, sir?
Just one quick comment.
Okay, please hurry down, and next up we have John Jasky from Bowser.
That's what I was going to ask. He's letting the time's going to be out. He's got no time to spend, so how do we question him?
Well, we will try. Good morning, Mr. Jasky, and thank you for being here. We really appreciate that, and go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. Thank you for your opportunity to provide some clarification. I'm John Jasky, Executive Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources. First of all, I just want to, you, Mr. Chairman, and members, let you know that the draft that went out was not properly vetted or prepared or communicated, and that was a mistake, and that mistake is my mistake, and it's on me, so I want to be very clear about that from the beginning. And as been noted, you know, based on those many comments, we did receive that public notice process. The proposed or the draft amendment will be rejected and not considered further. So that's the plan, and that's the fix it that I'm prepared to commit to today. A few more details on some background, if you would give me the opportunity. As
Mr. Jasky, some can't hear you very well. Could you speak into it, please? Thank you very much.
Try to get closer. Is this a little bit better?
Yep.
As I think most of everyone knows, on April 2nd, the Board of Water and Soil Resources published a notice seeking input on a draft amendment to the Administrative Penalty Order, or APO, plan that was adopted last year. The Administrative Penalty Order is an optional provision that local governments can use to accomplish compliance. This is in addition to impairment with the local authorities they have under Chapter 394 in the case of county government. Our intention was to use the coming period to get input on this idea or explore another option for getting local governments the option to achieve compliance, you know, in working with landowners, doing that with a linear measure instead of this parcel by parcel approach. We had intended to do that with a full transparency through this comment period in order to hear everyone give us their ideas about what they thought of our proposal. In retrospect, obviously, that wasn't at all well received. We've got a lot of comments. We've got comments from legislators, clearly from ag organization and farmers and others in opposition to that proposal. And we've got over 300 comments so far received on the record in the committee. Has a meeting this afternoon, as been mentioned, that will take up those comments and make a decision, as I mentioned previously. As you know, the buffer law was set up to have local governments supporting farmers in reaching compliance and avoid penalties altogether. One of the components of the law has a provision that allows for an 11-month period of time between when a non-compliance circumstance is identified and before any potential compliance is required through a fine or other mechanism. There are no administrative penalty orders that have been issued to date, and we, at this point, have not seen any noncompliance actions taken. Furthermore, if a noncompliance action is taken, that those penalties are forgivable when the compliance is actually achieved on the ground. It is to the credit of farmers and local governments in Minnesota that we're at 98% compliance currently, we want to continue to build on that with the public ditch systems that are having a deadline that's coming up this November. Having heard your concerns and concerns of farmers, we realized the draft APO we put out for comment was not in line with the spirit of the law. We acted in haste and did not consult with the relevant stakeholders. When we put this in front of our board, we did not highlight the potential concerns for local governments or for farmers. We did not consult with or inform the governor of our proposal. And as you know, you received a letter from the governor indicating such. We believe that the existing options in the law are fully sufficient going forward, and based on the responses we received from this committee, many of you, and others, we realized that the approach we took was a mistake. We're sorry that for the concerns that it caused you and the state of Minnesota farmers and other citizens who have expressed those concerns, and we are intent on fixing this going forward. And with that, I'll take some, Mr. Chairman, any questions your members may have.
Thanks, Mr. Jasky. I have one quick question, then we have some questions from members. I think one thing we all wonder about is that the option order had a pretty prescriptive list of the penalties, and we're discussing how big they were or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it looks to me like there could be a possibility of up to a $100,000 fine on 500 feet. And yet the letter said that you didn't give full consideration to the potential impact to farmers of that. How could a $100,000 fine escape possible impact? I mean, it's such a large fine that I really question that. Could you explain, please?
Mr. Chairman, as I said, you know, the proposal was put forth to get comments. It was not put forth in a way that was well-prepared, vetted, or communicated. And that component specifically was unnecessary and unwise, and we are retracting that proposal.
Thank you. Question from Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Director Jansky. So the first question I have is, where do you believe that you get the authority to assess a fine that's over $500 or repeated fines, when in statute it just clearly states a maximum fine is of $500 and only references the fine that would be assessed after 11 months and a day?
Mr. Jasky.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you're right. The statute does say there's a $500 maximum. The statute also has the statement that it's reissuable, that is a provision in the statute, and so that's the basis for that determination by our agency.
Representative?
And is Director Jansky, is it your opinion that you could assess this multiple times in one season? It's my belief that the buffer is either planted or it's not, mm-hmm. and to find someone repeatedly either every day or every month would seem extremely excessive. But is it your opinion you could find somebody within one season multiple times?
Mr. Jasky.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, if the buffer is in place, there is no need for compliance. The compliance has been achieved. And again, the administrative penalty order is an optional provision. It's not required to be used by local governments, so it's at their discretion that they would use it at all. And the statute is set up so that if they do use that there is a consistency with the state plan that we put forth. Did that answer your question, Representative?
Representative Munson?
Somewhat. Let me ask you this. Why do you think it's appropriate to find footage of a buffer that is in compliance based on a possible small portion of a buffer of linear footage that's out of compliance? Why would the fine be assessed to the entire buffer strip when 98% of it may be in compliance width-wise, but just a small portion would not be?
Mr. Jasky.
Mr. Representative, if you're speaking about the proposal, of course, we're withdrawing that, so that wouldn't apply. If you're speaking to the existing mechanism that's, again, optional, it is a parcel-based measure, simply because that's what we use to determine the property ownership, which is what the statute indicates, using the term landowner. So each parcel is owned by a landowner, and that's why we use the parcel as a basis for that.
Another follow-up, Representative?
Not at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up, Representative Backer.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Jasky. Simple question. Bring us through the timeline on how such a bad idea got out in the public.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Jasky.
Mr. Chairman. Representative, the way I got into the public is we did a public notice. We were not trying to, in fact, hide anything, just the opposite. We, you know, through all the programs that we work with, we use a public notice process, and that's very important because our programs are carried out by local governments, by counties and watershed districts and soil and water conservation districts and cities and so forth. So we need to make sure that those people have an opportunity to comment. What didn't occur in this case, and this is where the mistakes were made, was we didn't do the due diligence, the homework, the work up front to talk to those who would be potentially thinking this useful, the local governments. That was our mistake. We didn't have enough time to do all of that for one simple reason, is that the statute says that we were to certify local governments and their ordinances by June in order to provide the state funding that goes to them to carry out that work. And so that was the schedule. Again, I said that was a mistake, but that's the rationale, if you think of it that way, that we used for the timing of it.
Vice Chair Backer.
Yeah, I appreciate that, but that doesn't get to my answer. Let me use an example. I sell ATVs, and I will decide if I want to raise the price. I go and talk to somebody, maybe my twin brother or someone else. Is this a good idea? Who came up with such a ridiculous fine structure? You guys didn't, I mean, who was it? Was it you? You're taking responsibility. Did you say, hey, board, we really have to go after the ag community because they're naughty? We got 98% capacity, but now we want to get the other two? I want to know who came up, because I can't raise prices and send out a notice just out of the blue, Mr. Jaski. Who came up with this absurd fine structure?
Mr. Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, I'm taking responsibility for that.
So you're the one that came up with, Mr. Chair?
Representative?
So you're the one that came up with this?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm taking responsibility for this.
Representative Backer?
But that's not answering my question. You're taking responsibility. I appreciate it. But who sat down one day? Do you guys have coffee, donuts, and said, you know what? I think we have to raise that. I want to know who's responsible. Because if I make a mistake in my business, chargebacks, credit card companies, BBBs, they come after me. I go on who made the decision. You're taking responsibility. I appreciate that. But who decided this, please?
Mr. Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm taking responsibility. It was a proposal to get comments. And if you don't have enough specificity, we don't get meaningful comments. In retrospect, it was a mistake. I am taking responsibility for that.
Representative?
Well, a couple other questions. Was the department, was there someone there at the meeting from the Department of Agriculture?
Mr. Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Backer, are you speaking to the Bowser board meeting?
At that board meeting that proposed these changes, was there a representative from the Department of Agriculture?
Mr. Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I can get you the draft minutes from the meeting, which includes all the attendees and the record of the conversations and decisions that were made. I just can't recall right now who was there, but I believe someone was.
Yeah, if you could supply that to the committee, we'd appreciate that. Representative?
Yeah, a couple more questions. So when there was a vote, Mr. Jaski, when there was a vote, I understand it was a voice vote. Did everybody say yay? Was there any nays in the room?
Mr. Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'll have to look at the minutes, but I don't recall that there was, it was a voice vote is my recollection.
Okay.
Representative Backer.
And Mr. Chair, and you were there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, I was.
So was there any, Mr. Chair, was there, and Mr. Jaski, was there any no votes, or did the whole board say, let's go for it?
Mr. Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, we have a recording of the meeting. I could get that part of it to you. Just to be clear, you know, this, and if the board was reviewing this, it was based on a staff recommendation. That staff recommendation, I believe, characterized it as more routine than this clearly was, and that's my mistake, and I'm taking responsibility for it.
Additional follow-up?
One more question, and I'd appreciate your time, Mr. Jaski. This is a yes or no question. Does Bowser have the right to take jurisdiction away from the counties if they take them?
Just
a simple yes or no question, please.
If the counties elect jurisdiction, that is their decision, and they carry out that authority. Bowser has a responsibility for the statute to do the work if the counties do not have jurisdiction, or watershed districts in that case as well.
Representative?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jaskey, so what I'm hearing is once the county takes jurisdiction, it is their authority to keep that. Bowser cannot remove jurisdiction from the counties once they take jurisdiction. And you know what I'm referring to is the letter that was sent to Stevens County. There was a staff person, I think his first name's Dan, I don't remember last name, and I read it, it says that Bowser takes away jurisdiction. I don't see where it does that. You and I had that conversation. I want to know, do you believe that Bowser has that right to take away that jurisdiction?
Mr. Jaskey?
Mr. Chair and Representative, it isn't that we take away jurisdiction. The jurisdiction is the counties. The plan that they have for the administrative penalty order is what is at issue. If Stevens County or any other county can carry out this program with jurisdiction without using APO whatsoever, they can use their existing authority. So what we're doing is making a decision on the validity of their administrative penalty order that they would adopt through ordinance.
Representative?
Yeah, thank you. I'll just comment. Yeah, I believe from my interpretation and talking to others, county attorneys and so forth, that once the county takes jurisdiction, it is their decision, not a state agency. Thank you.
And I think that it's been brought up today before that this whole thing about compliance with the Bowser initiatives, I think that's something we have to look at and work on further. Next question, Representative Miller, and time is waning. We can be here, I'm guessing, till 12:15, 12:20. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You'll be pleasantly surprised that I have two very short questions.
I am surprised.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, I have a 10-minute comment before that. No, I'm kidding.
I knew it.
I do not, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jaskey, I do have a very brief comment. I do want to thank you for coming here today. I know this is difficult. And I actually do applaud you for being a stand-up guy. I also believe, in my opinion alone, is that you're being made the fall guy for this, and I don't appreciate that. I think that you have stood in the gap here, and you've been willing to take the bullets. You might have some involvement, but I think there's some people that have further responsibility to this that are hiding behind you, and I'm sad to see that. I have two short questions for you, and these are very brief, I believe. First question is how many agency commissioners are represented on the board?
Mr. Jaskey.
Mr. Representative, the board is made up of 20 members, of which, just so I get them all on the record, there are, I can remember correctly, the statute prescribes this, so it's not optional, but the three citizens, there are three soil and water conservation representatives, three county commissioner representatives, three watershed district manager representatives, two city representatives, one township, and four agencies, and then the University of Minnesota. The agencies are the Department of Health, Agriculture, Pollution Control, and Natural Resources.
Okay, thank you. And then just one more question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jaskey, in your opinion alone, why do you think that there is so much confusion and fret on the penalties by the ditch authorities and by the people represented in this room? Why is there so much confusion over all of this on a four-page law?
Mr. Jaskey?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you know, first of all, I think we added the confusion. I added the confusion by putting out this you know, ill-timed and poorly communicated and improperly prepared proposal. That is part of the confusion for sure. I think the rest of it is things that we're working through as the local governments make decisions on their jurisdiction. I think we've got, let me just check my note here, but from what my records show, we have 73 counties that elected jurisdiction. Of that, 23 are using the administrative penalty order authority, and 38 are using some combination of that with their existing authorities, and 12 are using only their authorities that they currently have under Chapter 394. So they're figuring it out. And again, there haven't been any compliance actions taken to date. So, you know, I think people are still learning. We can do a better job of communicating some of those details. But, Mr. Chairman and Representative, I can't speak to a specific point of confusion, but if you try to answer your question, if you have one of those that is specific.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, and I appreciate that, Mr. Jaskey. I guess the one thing that does need to be a takeaway from here is that regardless of this rule change proposal, I can tell you that I've been around since the onset. You and I were actually in the room helping putting this together. And this issue right here has caused confusion from the start, and it's caused confusion for our ditch authorities. I thought that Representative Munson's amendment that we're going to be talking about in another committee, but that is, it's obvious that we need some clarity for everyone, and I think we need to arrive at that clarity before we start penalizing people.
I would agree. Representative Lewick, we have four on the list, and the clock is ticking. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you. First, I would like to thank you, Director Zaski. Rarely do we have a individual show up that's responsible for a agency or a big piece of the agency that says, yep, we made a mistake. So I want to definitely give you credit for that. I guess first question, say the Bowser Board is made up of 20 individuals. Are they all appointed or any of them elected? How does that work?
Mr. Jasky?
Mr. Chairman, they're appointed to the state board, all appointed to the state board. Some of them are elected officials in their appointment. So county commissioners obviously are elected, soil and water conservation districts, et cetera.
Okay. Representative Lewis.
Thank you. I guess one of the things, and I'll just ask this, is there any member of the Bowser Board here, official member in the room?
Don't see any hands going up.
No. Well, I maybe there's reason to not identify yourself. I keep a little humor in this, but I'll go back to Director Jasky's made no bones about it. He's said, look, I happen to be the guy here at the in the spot, and we made a mistake. I find it very disappointing. And you can send this right back to all 20 of them, all 20 of them, that not a one of them could find the time to show up here. Look at these people. They did, to get a perception of what the heck is going on here. So I'm not yelling at you. I just hope they can hear that. All 20 of them, whether they're elected or appointed, a good part of them obviously have got a guaranteed wage. They're full-time and state employees. The four agency folks, so we don't, they couldn't show up here. That is really disappointing, Mr. Chair. And that's another, what that calls, and this is another message, that calls into question whether this committee and other committees need to go back and look at how Bowser is organized and whether or not we have really got a proper group of people, whether appointed or elected or not, because in theory, that's where the oversight should rest. We should not be here today. We should not be here today. Maybe we have to go restructure. Are they all appointed by the governor?
Mr. Jasky.
Mr. Chairman, yes, they are. They are representing those organizations. The local governments mm-hmm. in particular are critical because they carry out the agency's yeah. work. And so I think that is very, very important that those people be on the board and provide the direction and oversight that they do.
I just wanted to make that point that we need to back up here and take a look because there's probably a flaw way further upstream, and it may very well have to do that one single individual in the state, regardless of what party he's in, has got authority to appoint those folks. And because if they aren't going to, as we used to say, keep the staff out of the trouble, and I was on both sides, had to make decisions, and also was part of the staff. If that balance is out of kilter right now, that's another thing that we need to stand back and look at. So with that, I thank you. And again, I just want to make it clear, I want to give credit when a state agency and somebody in a responsible position stands up and says, yep, we blew it, we made a mistake. I appreciate that because that is way, way too seldom occurs here down in St. Paul. So thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad to have this opportunity to join with Representative Miller and Representative Lewick in honoring your stand-up attitude today and appropriately taking the responsibility. I've worked with you now for 5 to 6 years, and I appreciate the work that you do as well as Bowser and SWCDs. My questions are focused on really looking forward and going ahead, and I'm going to put together three quick questions. One is I'm concerned about really refocusing on working the traditional roles of SWCDs, working with farmers across the, or landowners across the kitchen table, which has really been a constructive and productive process for years. Works well where I live, and I think there's some rebuilding to do with that. I'm also concerned about and wondering what Bowser's thinking about to better enable county SWCDs to effectively and locally address the compliance. And then the last question, I'm glad Mr. Wierens is up there, and is to address the concerns about alternative practices. I think you know all along in this discussion, I've been a consistent supporter of really enabling that project. And so if you could address those again, how will you rebuild the trust that you've earned over many years, enable local SWCDs to effectively work on local compliance, and then the alternative practices?
Jansky.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, first of all, you know, my dad was a farmer, and he said when you made a mistake, you own up to it and you fix it. And so we're going to fix it. And the fix it is going to start by making sure the local staff and the farmers have a chance to do work together. They're doing that very, very well. This is not on them. This is my mistake. So all the soil and water conservation districts and watershed districts and counties that are doing this work, they're doing a good job. And they're trying hard, Stevens County included, and we'll work it out with them, I'm quite sure. So that's our way forward. Specific to your alternative practices question, you know, that was one thing that we did work with the legislature on last year, and that's an example of how we should do it and how we have done it. And that's why it's so regrettable that this didn't occur in the same fashion. And my commitment is to do that going forward, is to work collaboratively on these things, because that's the way we get things that work well and are durable and people want to use. So thank you for that example.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to finish. I also am in the camp that saw all along the buffer law as not being one to be punitive, and the fines were just really a very much of a last resort. And I agree with it. I saw it as a $500 maximum fine. That's the way I viewed it, and I hope that proceeds going forward. But I also want to quote that I'm not alone in that. The governor says in his letter, the goal has been to reach implementation through support for landowners using enforcement only as a last resort. And then, Mr. Jasky, in your letter, the buffer law was set up to support farmers reaching compliance and to avoid penalties. So I think we have an opportunity here to work together, as we should, across agency lines, across party lines, legislature lines, and to in that spirit to make sure that is the spirit of the buffer. Because, again, I think the point here is effectively made is that there is farmer after farmer after farmer who are compliant, who are doing the right things. And to honor that work, and when we've got 98% compliance, that says a lot about our landowners and our farmers, and we've got to make sure that we can move forward in that spirit to protect Minnesota's waters. And farmers are a partner in this, and they're doing a good job. Thank you very much.
Representative Pearson.
Yeah, again, thanks for coming. This isn't an easy day for you, and I appreciate you coming down. I'm just looking at your comments from February 20th in 2017 with the Senate committee, where you're very explicitly stating it's a $500 fee. What I'm confused about, and I was pouring through the statutes here real quick, in trying to figure out even how it's assessed per year. Like how you're finding that authority, and you just cited the fact that it can be reissued, and that must be where you're coming up with that authority, even though the reissue statute is talking a little bit more about the appeal process. So I think you're taking some latitude even by finding the authority through that verbiage. But if you were defining this in February of last year as a maximum of $500, I'm just confused how anyone within your authority would ever propose anything that would go beyond that. And then as a secondary part, how much further do you think you could go with this? Because if you can reissue it, why can't you reissue it every hour? Why can't you do it by every inch instead of every foot? I'm just confused at where this authority is coming from as I read the statutes. And if you think you have that authority, how much further do you think you could take that? How much latitude do you have at the $500 fine? Per inch? Per minute? Where does it end?
Mr. Jansky.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there will be no proposals going forward that have any of the descriptions of different units of measure that you're describing. What we're using is the current plan, which lays out a recurrence. It's up to the local government if they want to use this at all, and if they do, how they use it. So whether they choose to issue one order with a recurrence interval or whether they choose to simply use it on a repeat basis is up to them, the mechanism for how they do it. But we have no intention of doing any additional proposals that describe a different unit in terms of how that would be, that fine would be applied.
So what's the frequency level of reoccurrence?
Mr. Chairman, the statute doesn't prescribe one, and we have no intention of prescribing one ourselves.
Representative Backer.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jaski, one question here. Does consistent with the Bowser plan mean identical with?
Mr. Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, it does not mean identical, but it means meeting the minimum standard is the way I would describe it.
No.
Representative Backer.
Mr. Chair, and what do you mean by minimum standard? What are you foreseeing that, Mr. Jaski?
Mr. Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, the standard is that the penalty order be effective to either achieve compliance so that we don't have a penalty or the fine can be withdrawn or forgiven, or that there's a continuation so that we get to compliance. That's the practical standard.
No further follow-up.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think there's common agreement that this process and this this APO amendment was excessive, outrageous, absurd, inappropriate, all of those things. I think we all agreed to that, and it was a mistake. And it was a misstep, and it was certainly something that you're owning up to, so I appreciate that you're here to help us to understand really what happened and why it happened and maybe a little bit about the background for that. But so I thank you for coming today. Thank you for being able to share that you're taking responsibility for that. I appreciate that. I also want to thank the people who came, traveled long distance to be able to come here today. I think that was good. Initially I wasn't sure about how to get everybody to fit everybody in, and I realize we're over time, Mr. Chair, but I think it's important for everyone to hear what the stories are and how people have been impacted by that and the feelings they expressed. And I heard anger and frustration, confusion, fearfulness, a number of things. And I think that, this may or may not be the straw that broke the camel's back, but it may be close to that. And there are many other things that are facing farmers right now and ag producers. And certainly I've been a strong proponent of trying to provide resources, mental health resources and legal assistance resources and other things to be able to help farmers to be able to get through these rough times and tough times. So I think that that's important. And we've heard their feelings. I think they're seeking clarity, they're seeking guidance, certainty, consistency. I think, those things are fixable. We can hear their feelings, we can understand what they're seeking. One thing that's going to be the most challenging is how do we build the trust. And I think that that's something that we all of us, across the board, across the table here, in the audience, the farmers, the agencies, the governor, all of us legislators need to work on rebuilding trust. Because to me, government is not always the evil enemy that everybody wants to make it out to be, but it is sometimes a barrier to our, we can feel like it's a barrier to our success or to other things, and we have feelings, and emotion overrides everything. Feelings are what's important to people, and that's how they are coming to the table today, because they are very deeply concerned about how they're being impacted. So I think it's our responsibility to help to rebuild that trust, and I would just encourage anyone in the audience, anyone here, to let us know what you think is the way for us to rebuild the trust, because that's important. We are going to have government's going to exist long into the future. We're going to have people who are legislators that are going to be 20 years from now, probably not anyone in this room. So we're going to have to be able to figure out how do we do that. We need to be here for the people, work with the people, and I just appreciate that you came forward today, but I also appreciate that we had a number of testifiers that gave some really emotional testifying as well as just really pertinent to what their situation is, and I appreciate that, and I just wanted to let you know that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. If I could just ask for one final clarification from Mr. Jaski, and we've really gotten into this, the penalty enforcement action here, and I think that needs to be very much looked at. Now, according to some of the things that you've sent out, local governments can do one of two things. One is go with the APO, and if they do that, it says it must be consistent, again, whatever that is, with Bowser. But they may also choose to use their existing local government authority. So if they choose that second one, can they shoot from the hip and not comply with any of your consistent criteria? What's the meaning of that second local government criteria?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. That's a good question because the APO is an optional choice that counties, in this case, the example you're using, I think, can use. The existing authorities they have are, and legal people can maybe make sure I'm correct on this, but there's a chapter of law 394, and there's a specific subdivision or section to that, and that's what counties have used for all their land use programs, the shoreland, the floodplain, the septics, all of those things that they do and have been done for a long time. They can use that existing authority, and some of them are using that. So, again, if they choose not to use the APO, then they can go that other route and use that existing and longstanding authority that people are very familiar with.
So does that then take Bowser out of that equation locally?
Short answer, Mr. Chairman, is yes. The answer is yes.
Thank you for that clarification. Again, thank you all. Again, as one quick Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a follow-up question about the local governments opting to enforce this rule. If local government takes over to enforce it and chooses not to fine a farmer, does Bowser then step in and fine the farmer, or does Bowser have a series, or do you have a whole other list of fines that you can fine local government for not enforcing the buffer strip?
Mr. Jaski, I thought we had this settled here. We go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I think I can answer it quickly. If the local government has jurisdiction, Bowser has no authority to issue a fine. If the local jurisdiction has not accepted that responsibility, then we will use our fine mechanism, which are capped at the same $500 provision, the same section of statute that we've been talking about.
Okay, and then
go ahead, Representative.
So what specific water quality issues do you expect that the buffer law will address? Like, do you have numbers out there on what you expect after 5 or 10 years of 100% compliance?
Mr. Jaski?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think that's a longer conversation perhaps, but buffer strips or filter strips, have been a long-standing practice for water quality, and we've talked about it, I think, before. They provide, and again, it's site-specific, right, because it's site-specific situations, what we talked about last year in alternative practices. And so we don't have a data set that we can look to right now. We'll have to wait and see down the road what the changes look like, but we will be looking at science to base our future decisions on. Certainly that could be one of the factors that you're asking about, but right now we don't have that kind of information.
Thank you. Again, thanks to those in the audience that made the trip to St. Paul today, and my advice is beat rush hour before you stay too long. And I would just, my last comment would be that I think farmers feel that there's been kind of a litany of things that occurred that have caused them to have concern about we here in St. Paul. I think about the nitrogen rule, which again is being done by rulemaking. And we have a bill that Representative Backer carried to make it come back here for final approval. And I think this example today kind of illustrates why we feel that's important, that rulemaking is rulemaking, but yet we kind of like to see what they've done and give it a thumbs up or thumb down. So I think this speaks to that as well. And the other thing that is concerning to folks in agriculture is the excess soil loss ordinance, or the rain tax, as was mentioned. And that also was morphed. That was a 1984 voluntary county ordinance, and now with the buffer bill in 2015, it's become mandatory. And again, you're going to be working with that. Can you give us just a quick synopsis of what's happening with the excess soil loss?
Mr. Chairman, representative, there's not been anything that's been done yet with that. I mean, as you mentioned, it's a statute that's been in place and was an amendment to it to do it without requiring an ordinance to be the mechanism. And so we can come back and talk to you about that at some point in more detail, clearly, but nothing has happened. It's not really put forth in any way that's other than existing statute is all we have. We've had, I think, only three complaints filed over that, and they've all been taken care of without any issues. So I guess I can give you more details at a later date, perhaps.
Okay, thank you much. And again, thank you very much for being here today. Quick comment, Vice Chair Bapper.
Yeah, just in with the rain tax concern, that bill was to be heard today, 3836, in the Environmental Committee, but that was pulled yesterday, so it's not... The Environmental Committee has not taken up because there's quite a few of our representatives, Representative Miller, myself, Munson, and some other Representative Green who had some concerns. We've been working with the author, Representative Torkelson, and still working through it. So that's why it wasn't heard in Environmental today.
The deadlines are rapidly approaching.
They are indeed, Chair.
With that, again, thank you to all who are here today. And we went over time, but I think it was important to have everybody heard and hear from the chairman. Thank you again. Meeting is adjourned.